It's your life. Live it. Live on AWR SID Media, from broadcast to baptism.
Good afternoon, welcome. Thank you very much. You are listening to Live with me, Nayalu Pondo, and it's 10 minutes now after 1. It is our last installment for the week of the Grow Model, and we do have our guest already on standby to give us some perspective on our conversation for today. Remember, the whole week, we've been trying to learn this idea, this concept of free will. Today, free will in a word of injustice. Is it enough? Free will in this world of injustice? You heard what we're talking about with the pastor right before this conversation. We preach that everyone has free will, right? But tell that to a child in a war zone, like in Gaza, as we speak, a teen trapped in poverty in Alexandria, or a woman born into abuse. Is free will a universal truth or a luxury for the privileged? Today, we confront the uncomfortable reality of inequality and ask, can freedom survive in a world that's already stacked against so many? That's why we have Elder Dennis Chisenga on the line to talk to us about this. Elder Chisenga, good afternoon to you once again. Welcome back, and thank you very much for agreeing to talk to us.
Good afternoon to you, and thank you so much.
Can someone truly exercise free will, my Elder, when they are trying to survive daily injustice? I mean, you're born into this. Is it really free will?
Well, the clear answer is yes, free will always exists because it's part of our divine design. However, when someone is in a survival mood, their range of options, we know that they severely get limited. And this does not erase, however, their capacity to choose, but it constrains it. Like you earlier stated, somebody in a war zone, a person who is in a war zone, they'll still make moral decisions daily, whether to protect others, whether to steal, whether to speak, or to remain silent. So these, they may be very small decisions or opportunities to make free will, but they are significant. So yes, people can exercise free will, and we must also know that free will is not the absence of suffering, but it's the presence of moral agency even in it, where you exercise your moral significance and exercise your willpower in the face of any suffering or any injustice situation. Sure.
Is it fair, though, Ndala, is it fair to hold people to the same moral standard when they are born into radically different conditions?
Just like the way you said, moral standards. If standards, they keep on changing time and again, then the society won't be a safe society, because in each and every time, things will keep changing and will keep adjusting according to that. So God's moral law, for example, it never changes. But what happens is that its judgment is not mechanical. It's not because you shall not kill. Whether you know it or you don't know that this is against God's law, then it means you have sinned or you've done something wrong. But the judgment is based upon the light which you've received, the knowledge and the opportunity which you have to exercise that. And that's what Romans chapter 2, verse 13 to 16, it clearly states that God judges based on what people know and have access to. So coming to the question, is it fair to hold people to the same moral standard? Yes, it is fair, because their moral standards are being judged based on the light which they've received. So they're accountable to the light which they have at that moment. So God cannot judge them based on what they don't know, but on what they know. So they should be held accountable to that which they know. Although later, some other things will be revealed to them as time goes on.
Let's give an example of these different circumstances. While we understand that thou shalt not kill applies generally to everybody, but in a situation where somebody is trying to kill you, trying to rape you, and you are trying to defend yourself, when you kill a person in self-defense, have you killed? Because the verse says thou shalt not kill. Or is it free will when you are forced by that injunction not to kill, to allow the person who's trying to violate you or to kill you because you're holding fast to the standard of thou shalt not kill? They are trying to kill you, but you are not supposed to defend yourself and kill them?
So now, that's where the complexity of free will comes into play. So the moral standard is that you should exercise what is right, given whether the circumstance is infringing your capacity to exercise what is right.
So in this situation, what is right? Tell us what is right in this situation where somebody is trying to...
What is right is...
No, you can go ahead. You can go ahead, Dala. I need you to clarify for us. When somebody is trying to rape you or sodomize you or kill you or to kill your family or next of kin, what is the moral thing and the right thing to do there? Do you fold your arms and say, thou shalt not kill, and let them kill you? What's the right thing to do? When you say you must do the right thing, what is the right thing to do in that situation?
So the right thing which you need to do is to protect yourself. Ultimately, you protect yourself. But then it does not mean in protecting yourself you should kill the other person. So you must find means and ways to protect yourself, but you shouldn't destroy another life because you know you shouldn't kill. So to you who knows you shouldn't kill, you must defend yourself, but not to the level of killing the other person.
Explain how that works, Mfundisi. There's a knife that is now coming your way. Both of you now are holding this knife. What do you suggest we do? Because the person is trying to plunge that knife onto your heart. And what do you do? Do you say, no, no, don't stab me. It's wrong to do to kill. What do you do? What do you do?
Yeah, and that's a tough one, yeah? Well, like I've earlier mentioned, yours is to protect, it's to protect yourself. But like we've already been mentioning, and it's very important, again, for we as Christians to exercise walking with the Holy Spirit, because it's not in every situation and every circumstance where you find there's something written in the Bible of what you should do in every situation. But the standard is there's a principle, and the principle is protect yourself, don't harm the other person, rather don't destroy the life, don't kill the other person, protect yourself. So what you will do in order to navigate your way out is now dependent on how your relationship is with God, of what is the best.
Yeah, but the question that I need you to clarify is, how do you do that? How do you protect yourself against a person who's trying to kill you if you don't kill him? How do you suggest we do that?
An honest answer. Yes, for me to give an honest answer, I wouldn't suggest what exactly a person would do, because myself, I've never found myself in such a situation. And I wouldn't actually know at that moment what I should do. But one thing which I know for sure is I must protect myself, but I must not end destroying another life. So, yes, that's basically how I can answer to that one. I don't know exactly what I would do or what I would suggest somebody would do, but the standard is protect yourself, don't destroy another life.
And if it is not possible, Mdala, if it's not possible to protect yourself without destroying another life, it's like you're saying you must jump into a pool but don't get wet.
It's a tough one. It's a tough one.
Let's move on. It's all right. It's all right, my elder. How does God's justice account for unequal starting points? And I want to give you a simple example again here. We have the Israelites, who after over 400 years are born into slavery, And then we have the Egyptians after the 400 years who are born into liberty. Do tell us now the idea of free will there. How does God's justice account for unequal starting points? One is born into slavery, one is born into liberty.
Well, God's justice, it accounts for unequal beginnings. And how is that possible? He judges not where you started, where you ended, but how you respond to what you are given at that particular time. So God does not expect equal results, but he expects faithful stewardship of what we've been given. Just like when you go to the parable of the talents in Matthew 25, 14 to 30,
right,
where it shows God giving different amounts and is expecting proportionate returns. So each servant was rewarded based on what they did with what they had. So God alone sees every detail. The abuse which somebody has endured, the ignorance somebody has suffered, the courage which is shown in secret. So he is not impressed by appearances, but what has moved somebody, the integrity behind that decision. So to basically answer, how does God's justice account for an equal starting or point or beginnings, is that he accounts for how you are responding to whatsoever comes your way, despite where you are starting from. But how are you responding with whatsoever is granted unto you at that specific and particular time?
Okay. Is it possible, though, my elder, that we are misusing the idea of free will to avoid dealing with systemic brokenness?
The clear answer is yes. Yes, it is. It is possible that the idea of free will is sometimes abused to justify in action. It can be wrongly used also to say, no, they chose their path, so it's fine. They deserve what they want. So while we also ignore the other part of how were they brought up, what's the background, where they've been, have they had a fair chance of whatsoever situation they are passing through, have they experienced such kind of situation? So scripture is clear that both personal sin and societal injustice, they matter. Just like when we read in Isaiah 1 verse 17 and Micah 6 verse 8, where God commanded believers to pursue justice, not just to preach it, like you earlier said in a previous conversation. So the gospel is not silent on systems. Just like Jesus, he rebuked religious systems that burdened people. And that's what we find even in the writings of Ellen White in Ministry of Healing, page 158, where she called for us to be involved in reform and to care for the oppressed. So the takeaway is that acknowledging free will must never replace the church's call to fight injustice. And the true faith addresses both sin and the system. So we must be there to stand, not to weaponize free will to justify or defend a certain system. We must stand on the principle and stand for the right, sure.
On that very note, let me close on that very note of the church's role of fighting for those who have no free will. What does it look like when the church uses its freedom to fight for those who don't have it?
Actually, it will look that the church is walking the talk, and that the church is not living in a sort of utopia kind of mind, but they're understanding the reality and the challenges of the situation happening. And this is why churches are dotted in communities. The society will understand that the church is not a separate entity, away, isolated from the community, but it's part of the community, which is based inside the community. So when the church truly embraces free will, it needs to advocate for others to experience this free will, which we talk about fully. And this includes, and this is what actually we call practical ministry, defending the voiceless. And that's what Proverbs 31:8-9 talks about. So it's not just about having a prophetic voice in an unjust system. We must stand and be practical, defend Just like what happened in my country recently in Zambia, there were high cases of defilement and the like, and the church had to stand and speak and condemn those kind of abuses and the like. And that's what it should be. We must be a church which opens up schools for those who are less privileged, offer some free health services to those who do not and who cannot afford to attend, open up shelters. In short, we must be in the society. But again, I must make a disclaimer. This is not a social gospel. It is biblical. It's a spirit-filled mission. Just like we read, Jesus went, he healed, he fed, he taught, and he also protested against the leaders who were actually doing what was wrong. They were not being just. They were not being fair on the people. So the church is most faithful when it uses its freedom, not just to save souls, but to restore people's God-given ability to choose him for themselves. Sure.
All right. We're going to leave it there. Thank you very much, my elder. Thank you. Really appreciate your time and your insights. God bless you and your ministry. May you have a blessed day further and a blessed Sabbath tomorrow. Thank you, my elder.
No, thank you so much, and have a good day and a blissful Sabbath ahead.
Thank you very much, my elder.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.